So anyway, I want to say welcome. This is the exam prep for 70-347. Some of you have, so who's already taken 346? And okay, so 347, how many of you have attempted 347? Yeah, 347 is, I found it to be more challenging than 346. And 346 wasn't easy. So the things that I talk about here, I talk about my experience with these exams. And one thing that you guys know this, you've taken an exam, you know what we can talk about, what we can't talk about. But I've written both 346 and 347, and at one point I failed both 346 and 347. They're tough exams. So I know and I understand the frustration. They're tough. And I'm a proud guy. A little bit about me, and I put my information up here. I'm Bob. Some of you stuck around for the first session, you know that we're doing the second session here. The folks that were here at the first session can vouch for it. I'm a real casual guy. This is not a lecture. This is a conversation. We're going to cover a few questions and a few topics, but I want you to understand that when we take a look at these sample questions that are up here, don't worry about these sample questions. But they're just trying there to they're there to highlight the subject that you want to familiarize yourself with. The questions are ones that I can't come up with my own because I think they're afraid that I'm going to come up with something that's too close to a real certification exam question. So these are the ones that are from the approved deck. So, like I said, I'm Bob. My last name is pronounced Wrench, like the tool. And yes, my middle name is Alan. So, yeah, I get the joke. The irony is that I come from two generations of mechanics. My dad was a mechanic and a service manager. My grandfather was a mechanic and a service manager. And of all the wrenches that I could find myself working with, I probably use Allen wrenches more than any other type of wrench because I'm a guitar junkie. I love guitars. So yeah, I'm always fiddling around with those. Yeah, here's my hex key, and I'm fooling around with that kind of thing. So by the way, I would love to perform on this stage because this room's got pretty nice acoustics. I like that. So I'm a technical instructor with Centric Training in Leawood, Kansas. I put Kansas City up there because that's easier to find on the map. I am a Microsoft certified trainer, have been since 1995. My history with computers dates to the mid-70s. I was one of those 13, 14-year-old kids that found the Commodore PET with the chiclet keyboard, saving programs to cassette tape, that my school had stashed into a storeroom between the chemistry lab and the physics lab. And I monopolized that thing. I'm the reason why my school had to buy more computers, because I was the one that was finding ways to manipulate my schedule so that I could spend as much time learning how to write code as I possibly could. Started off as a computer science major in college. And that, I didn't always get into that part of it back in 81, 82, because I went from PCs, working on small personal computers for several years already, to going to mainframes and punch cards. And after you drop that box heading to the Burroughs mainframe for about the third time, yeah, you know where I'm going with that. That was a little frustrating at times. But I studied some journalism, speech communication, and business. And you combine that with some additional computer science, and you end up with a pretty good foundation for becoming a technical trainer and technical writer. I've done technical writing and technical editing on about 27 books. So the last one I worked on was Mastering Exchange Server 2013 with David Alfassi. Thinking about maybe doing another one sometime, I don't know. So we're going to talk about some things relating to this exam. I'm going to give you as much as I can without getting into trouble. Like I said, this is a conversation. If you have a question, ask. I will do my best to answer it without violating my NDA. Because if you've taken a certification exam, you've read the beginning of it, you know that there are things we can talk about, there are things we can't talk about. And as a trainer, I live and die by my certifications. I'm not ready to change careers quite yet. Well, last week I was an MCT. This week I'm a full-time Uber driver. Yeah. So let's talk about this. We're just basically talking about what it takes to prepare for 70-347. And the key takeaway, experience with deploying and managing Office 365 is key. But, you know, when it comes to deploying and managing, I think that's actually a little bit more of a goal of 346. With 347, it comes down to managing the individual applications. We're going to make this like church and have everybody slide in towards the middle. Please accommodate people that are looking for a place to sit. I appreciate that. Thank you. Open with hymn number 347? No. You saw what I did there. 347. Never mind. Okay, so emphasizing some of the things that I talked about. This, you know, I talk about a lot of things in 346 session we did earlier and 347. The thing that is going to frustrate many of you is the fact that my experience, I'm an Exchange guy. I've been working with Exchange since it was Microsoft Mail 3.2. I did the 4.0 betas, I did 5.0, 5.5, 2000, all of them up through 2016. And a few years ago, it was 2010, I guess, the training company I worked for needed to get somebody ramped up on Link, so I took that on because a lot of that real-time communication stuff used to be built into Exchange. So I thought I'd take and spin that up, I'd be okay. So I've got those two things going for me. But Office 365 is more than that. You know, we spent all these years specializing in one area. Oh, I'm the Exchange guy, I'm the SQL guy, I'm the SharePoint guy. And now we get Office 365 certification exams, and being the Exchange guy just isn't enough anymore. You've got to know Skype for Business. You've got to know SharePoint. You've got to relearn the deployment process for Office 365 Pro Plus. And that can be frustrating because it's just not something that's in my comfort zone, you know? I like being comfortable. Yeah. So, well, I mean, that's where I'm at. I'm 53 years old. I like easy. So this isn't it. I'm sorry, I hope I didn't disappoint anybody with that statement, but I think many of you already know that. You know, if it was easy, then everybody'd be doing it, and there wouldn't be anything special about earning this particular certification. So what you're going to see, if I recall correctly, I saw 52 or 54 questions when I took it. I don't think that's giving anything away that I can't share, because I'm not telling you what the question is, right? You get adequate time to complete it. You've got time to make comments. I think I made some comments when I did it that they probably didn't appreciate too much because I had a feeling I wasn't going to pass. 700 is passing, but wouldn't it be nice if 70% of the questions anyway were easy ones that were easy to answer? But I think you'll find that that's not necessarily the case either. But 700, whoops, what happened there? Okay. The one that will get you, and you got to be prepared for this part, this third bulleted item, you can review your questions sometimes because you're going to get case studies, and the case study is kind of sandboxed. So you'll get 3, 4, 5 questions on the same scenario. And there's a lot of parameters in those scenarios. And the questions won't deal with all of the parameters that you might deal with, but they're sophisticated situations. And after you get through that section that sandbox of questions, you can review those questions. But the moment you click to go on to the next scenario or the next section, you cannot go back. And for me, that was a frustration because I know that later on in the exam, I saw something that went, oh, I need to go back and change. I can't. I can't go back and change that. What's that? To mess with you. I don't know. I really don't know why Microsoft does some of the things they do. Yeah. Am I thought I had a case study in 347.
You did, yeah.
Yeah. 346 and 347 both should have them, yeah.
They didn't before, but yeah,
Okay. I think I'm remembering correctly, but yeah. You know what? I've had to take so many over the last few years that they all kind of run together for me in a lot of cases. And I'm not exaggerating. I mean, that's obviously when you're a trainer and you teach a number of different classes, you got to stay certified on them. And I just, yeah, I do sometimes get confused. That comes from age and children. So let's talk about this. Oh, that was new. Okay. So I mentioned that, you know, presenting this information, some of the stuff that I've got to talk about is a little bit canned. And this is one of the areas that was given me. And I'm not sure that I care for the term anatomy, but structure I think is appropriate to describe, you know, the way these questions are set up. You got a problem. You got to come up with a solution. Sometimes you're going to be given a lot of distractor parameters in the business problem. So you got to be able to filter some things out when you're taking a look at it. You've got a goal, and the goal is going to be related to several of the business problems. It might only be one thing in the business problem. And you still have a number of parameters in there that are there to throw you off. You know, you're going to have like three or four different paths you can walk, but there's really only one path you can take. Now, one of the things I wish when you've got multiple correct answers or you've got sequences that you've got to follow, sometimes you're going to be presented a list of possible things that have to be done to complete a goal. Sometimes you might say, find the three things and put them in the right order. And you might get others that say, find the correct steps and put them in order, and they don't tell you how many steps there are. So that part of it, I know, can be a little bit frustrating because sometimes they're so close. But there'll be one word, one phrase, one argument or switch that is the difference between what's right and what's wrong when you're taking a look at those questions. And the distractors. I've got a love-hate relationship with distractors because some of them, you can look at them and you can immediately write them off. Others are just written real close, real close. And those are the ones that will get me just like getting anybody else. It's usually an argument or a switch that I missed because I'm going too fast. One of my problems that I've often had when going after these certification exams is overconfidence, thinking, I know this, I got this. I don't need to read that question twice. Yeah, read the question twice. Read all the answers two or three times. got to dig in and figure out what they're really asking you, and then take it from there. Yeah, the last session, there was an interesting response to this when I hit that button. Questions are not intended to trick you. Yeah, we had one guy in the front row have a coughing fit. Okay, so maybe the operating word there is intended, but they're still capable. I get it. I get frustrated with these things too, so we'll just kind of let that one slide. So each question is worth 1 point, no partial credit. No points deducted for wrong answers. But here's what I tell people about it. The most frustrating thing about this is the fact that Office 365 is a moving target. What you know today might be all well and good, but you don't know about, you know, what was the status of Office 365 at the time that the question was written? It might have been a rev ago. I find the most frustrating part of the changes to the GUI. And I teach these courses. You know, I teach 346, it's not 346 anymore. It's 20347. And one of the things that we have to do every single time we teach this class is go, okay, let's read this lab first and figure out where we're starting and where we want to finish up. Now let's see how close the actual steps are to what we're trying to accomplish. Because invariably, it's changed a little bit. It always changes a little bit. Office 365 is a work in progress. And it's constantly being modified and improved. But it is exceptionally difficult for anybody that's designing courseware, anybody that is writing a book, anybody that's maintaining a blog, to stay up to date on all the little changes that are constantly taking place in Office 365. I focus on a couple of things. Right now, we know that we're going through a portal update. We've had the classic portal that we've been working with, and a lot of the questions that you're likely to see are going to be based on the classic look of the portal. But now I saw, what was it, the Azure class. The Azure class, I saw that they're using both the classic portal and the new portal. And they're talking about connectivity between the version 1 VMs and the version 2 VMs and all the little things you have to do about that. That's not part of this, but that's kind of what we're dealing with the Office 365 side as well. We're going through a portal update. And it's not just changes to the portal. We're seeing changes to some of the roles and some of the names associated with the roles. And to be frank, I have no idea how that might affect the questions in the coming weeks. Because I know it's gonna happen. The questions that we see are gonna get refreshed. And they're probably on a 2-month, 3-month refresh cycle now. Some of the questions will expire, some will still stay relevant, and others will be introduced. And that's why the 346 and 347 certification exams can be so frustrating. I could have used some very colorful language right there. But yeah, these are exams that inspire colorful language. Yeah. The Office 365 certification track will recertify every year. Yeah. Yeah, that's... You're going to see that with Office 365. You're going to see that with Azure because that's what they're doing with that refresh cycle. Yes. I love the way you raised your hand like that. It's almost like a dance move.
So if I said 346 a year ago, does that mean...
You probably want to check your transcript. It should have a date on there. You will eventually have to retake it. I'm just not sure what kind of time frame you'd be looking at. Because it's going to be a frustration for a lot of us. I've reached a point, I hate taking them. No, because I'm a trainer. I have to take them, I have to stay certified. And I tell you what, And this is something I shared with the first group, and I'll get right back with you. I went from a period of like 2003 to 2012, 2013. I was acing all my exams the first time I was taking it. And I don't know what happened. You know what? No, I think I know what it was. Yeah, I'm starting to think about what happened with me physically. So I had something that happened around 2011, 2012 that I really haven't thought about too much. I had a very small stroke. And I'm wondering, is this, you just, well, see, in that, I don't remember certain things. I'm wondering if, now you got me thinking maybe that's what happened. Oh, it was weird too, just like a pop behind my eye. And then everything went to monochrome. And then I got dizzy. And I sat down and I was okay after a while. But yeah, maybe that's what it was. I don't know. It changed in my brain. Or it might have been the heroin. Sorry, I'm kidding around. You know, when my feet start hurting from walking on the convention floor, I don't fool around with those mamby-pamby over-the-counter drug relievers. I go straight for the Mexican black tar heroin. That's it. I believe in, I make jokes about things because I freeze up, it helps with the tension. But you know what? These exams cause tension. And I get performance anxiety when I've got to walk into that room to take them. Even though as many exams as I've taken, and I've probably taken 80-some-odd certification exams over the years, but I still get butterflies, I still get anxious, and it probably affects me. I probably ought to go get a massage or something before I go in and take a certification exam anymore. No, we're not going to make any more jokes about that. Okay. So you had a question. You know, there's been some talk of that, but I haven't seen anything firm on the timeline. I think we talked about that on Saturday. You know, why are we taking just 346 to 347? When, why isn't there an update for people that have taken it previously? And I don't know that I was necessarily satisfied with the answer that I got, because it would be nice, but I'm going to probably guess it's probably not going to happen. It's going to be recert every year. And that's rough. I know it is. You know, you think about where I'm at, because I teach Office 365, Exchange, Skype for Business, Server, and Client. You know how many exams I got to worry about taking every year? Yeah, it's not fun. So anyway, let's move on. Oh, this one. The GUI changes faster than the PowerShell does. One of the things that was a conversation we had with certification on Saturday was the fact that, yes, the GUI does change faster, but PowerShell is, even though I know we got some pending changes coming up, but still, PowerShell is where you want to anchor your learning experience. And for a lot of you, that's going to come very naturally. Those of you that have a lot of dev background, a lot of scripting background, PowerShell comes to you second. Oh, I've got to be careful and walk off the edge on here. Okay, but PowerShell is where you want to start. And of course, you want to understand how that relates to what's going to happen in the GUI and the essential steps that come into play. But so much of it is going to be dependent upon, this is what we're doing in PowerShell. And you're going to want to dig into the minutia, because if it's a PowerShell and it's a switch or an argument associated with PowerShell, it's fair game. And I remember seeing some switches that I looked at them and went, where did this thing come from? Is this even a real switch? You know what I'm talking about. And it's frustrating because it's, you know, 'cause one of the things that will get you about TechNet when you're taking a look at PowerShell commands is that they get into the parameters that you can use. And sometimes that table goes a little bit wider than your screen. And what you don't see is what's happening over on the far right-hand side. There's some more switches over there sometimes that are a sub-switch of an existing switch. And, oh, yeah, isn't that, it drives you crazy, doesn't it? So what I tell people, what I advise the group in the last group, open up a OneNote notebook and create your own study guide and copy and paste those commands in. And I'm going to tell you, don't just do it. The things I'd watch for in TechNet, obviously the commands and the parameters, all the examples. Absolutely the examples. And especially pay close attention to examples that have 4 or 5 steps to them. And also take a look at the MVP blogs that are being hosted on Microsoft's website, because those MVPs, they know their business, and a lot of them are putting in PowerShell procedures. And because they're out there and the blogs, they're going to be fair game too. So I try and steer people in the right direction with that stuff, and I think that's one of the things that I can share without getting into any trouble. Know how to administer each area of Office 365 through PowerShell. Also, know which PowerShell prompt to open up, because it's not always going to be the default. Remember, with Office 365, you're going to have a different PowerShell option, whether you're connecting and doing a remote exchange session, whether you're doing SharePoint, whether you're doing Skype for Business. So we got to know those as well. As far, yes, you know, as far as, okay, so repeating your question. Right. Yeah, because I do the same thing. I got a profile I set up in Windows ISE, or PowerShell ISE, loads up everything I need, and then, that's what we do in real world, but that's not the way they present it in a Microsoft exam, because we don't talk about profiles in the Microsoft exam in PowerShell ISE. We talk about connecting to SharePoint admin, or we talk about connecting to Outlook.com. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know that setting up a profile is actually one of the testable parameters. I don't recall that ever popping up. What's that? Yeah, yeah, but this is Office 365, so. Yeah, they do get into the and making sure you have the prereqs met. You know, whatever else you need. And that once again, that's where there's that little bit of a disconnect between what we might do in a production environment and what you have to do in preparation for the exam. So, and that's, there's really no other way around it. It's going to pop up like that way. So a few other things here. Now, this, when we take a look at this, one of the things I mentioned in the last group, and I'll say it here again, these are some canned questions. You will not see these questions on an exam. They've been approved for, you know, for a demonstrative purpose here. But what I'd tell anybody here, you know, if you're not familiar with the study hall across the way, they've got measure ups, practice tests over there. We had a bunch of us. I showed people where it was over the break last time. Sometimes arm in arm, skipping down the hallway. But yeah, she's laughing now. It's a good place to go and just take a look and get a feel for what the exam is going to be like, especially for those of you that haven't taken a trial run at this exam yet. We got to know how to manage clients and end user devices, SharePoint site collections, administering SharePoint site collections. Not only that, but you know, how would I do it through the GUI? How would I do it through PowerShell? Then you get into configuring Exchange Online and Skype for Business Online for end users. What can end users do by default? What do they require elevated permissions to accomplish? And then, you know, planning for that part of it. Managing clients and end user devices, manage user-driven client deployments. We get into the issues there. Where can I deploy Office 365 Pro Plus? Which clients? Which clients are going to not fit in the mix? What's the best way to manage licensing? What's the maximum number of deployments per user? 5, yeah. But what's going to be a distractor? You know, I've got 5 deployments. Does that mean if I've got a desktop, a Surface, another desktop at home, and I've got a Mac, is there a mix on those licenses? How does that come into play? What if I've got a Surface RT, old Windows 8.1? You know, those are the kinds of things that you have to, you got to ponder and straighten out in your head before you tackle this, because that's kind of the thing you're going to see with all that licensing stuff. The one that popped up earlier, we talked about this, Office telemetry. I teach the 20347 course, which used to be 20346, and we spend an entire module focused on setting up Office telemetry. If you don't know Office telemetry, you will fail the exam. So pay attention to where is Office telemetry automatically enabled? Where can it be enabled, but it's not automatic? You know, we know it's going to be built into the Office 2013, or the, Office Pro 2013 is going to be built into Office 365 Pro Plus. What about Office 2010? Can I get Office telemetry to work with Office 2010? Yes. Can I get it to work with Office 2007? Yes. But what do I have to do to get that to work right and get it to report? If I'm setting up Office telemetry, what's the best platform? What platforms can I install the database that acquires the information? And which ones are the best choices? So you've got that, that Express database that we can implement to gather information. Okay, so I install that on a Windows 10 machine, or I install that on a Windows 7 machine. I can do that. What are the problems with that? How many concurrent sessions can a client operating system have? Come on. How? 25? Is that right? What if you've got 50 users out there running telemetry? You're not going to be able to do that. You're going to have to get it installed on a server product, right? So things like that are going to pop up. So here's an example of a possible topic that you might see. What it comes down to in this case, what are we taking a look at here? We're taking a look at a configuration.xml file, or a snippet of a configuration.xml file. I like the word snippet. Where do you keep the snippets? We keep them in the room. It's a type of plange. Okay, so that's an obscure reference to the IT crowd that nobody else got in the room but me. Okay, if you haven't seen the BBC series, The IT Crowd, you owe it to yourself. Get Netflix and watch it. You'll recognize people. What's that? Channel 4. That's where they let them have the naughty language, right? Oh, that's my kind of show. Okay, so anyway, one of the things that you, the key thing here is this expression right here, configuration.xml. Know everything about configuration.xml. What are the possibilities? What are the various switches? What if you want to make sure that a particular component in Office 365 Pro Plus is not included in your deployment? You know, we can exclude Access, right? You can exclude PowerPoint. How am I going to exclude OneDrive for Business? Groove. Exclude groove. I just like saying groove. But yeah, that kind of ties in with that. You have to install Office 365 Pro Plus on a remote desktop services server. Interesting. And taking a look at this, you know, display level equals none except EULA equals true. So display level equals none, EULA level equals true. So that means that we're trying to minimize the amount of user interaction with that, right? We're automatically agreeing to the end user license agreement. We've got a couple here, none true, none true, none false, none true. Is there anything in the question asking you about whether or not you're doing any kind of interaction with the end user license agreement? There's nothing there, so that's all distractor stuff. Then you get into the property name equals shared computer licensing, and you've got two options there, then auto activate. Notice what you got values there associated with that. So those are examples of some of the content that you might see. And relative to this one, the second one appears to be the best one if you got a question like that. But what did I tell you? These are all example questions that you will not see. So you probably won't see a question like that on the exam. But it gives you an example. The main thing here is understanding that you are going to likely see questions about configuration.xml. You're going to see questions about Office telemetry. We know that. SharePoint online site collections. Now, this is the one that always gets me because I'm not a SharePoint guy. I got a lot of respect for the SharePoint folks. But so just out of curiosity, who my Exchange folks? Who Exchange admins? Arms down. Skype for Business admins. And SharePoint admins. And notice that there's different people now holding up their arms. That's the part that'll drive you crazy about Office 365. Yeah. And this is the one that always got me, was the SharePoint stuff. Configuring external user sharing. Setting up publicly accessible websites. Setting up publicly accessible websites based on the different versions of your Office tenant account. There's some differences at times. Creating SharePoint site collections, managing permissions to those SharePoint site collections. Putting together a solution. Granting somebody access and then changing it later. So you have to do Windows PowerShell management of SharePoint online sites of Fabricam, which connects to the SharePoint Online. Well, there's a couple there that I'm going to write off automatically because they just don't seem to be long enough commands. But we see that connect SPO service, HTTPS Fabricam-admin. This is one that I think throws a lot of people off, because they think they can connect to fabricam.sharepoint.com. You got to get that admin in there. And it throws people off a little bit. Next we get into, email addresses. Email addresses and SIP addresses are a part of this. So we've got to know where we can go and modify it, these sections of the GUI, but we've also got to know how we can do it in PowerShell, and you have to know every way you can do it in PowerShell. Because what I found out, and what some of y'all, I'm from Kansas, we say y'all, but what some of y'all found out is that sometimes there's some oddball, obscure ways of changing some of these parameters, and guess what? Microsoft knows what they are. The people that are writing the exams know what they are. I hope you know what they are, because that's one of the frustrating parts about this. I am a creature of habit. When I go and do something in PowerShell, and I learn one way to do it, and that works, how much more effort am I going to put into learning another way? I like easy. I'm probably not going to spend as much time as I probably should learning alternatives to an existing PowerShell command. That's frustrating for me. Yeah. The nice thing about anything having to do with a hybrid deployment is that the go-to is always change it on-prem. So that part makes it easy because that's just a traditional Exchange SFB question, you know, because that's where we do it. And then you have to worry about, you know, Azure AD connector, making sure it synchronizes back up. That part of it, that's not going to bug you so much. Actually, I think sometimes the questions about hybrid deployments are a little bit easier than those about everything that's all in the 100% cloud, because I'm so used to doing stuff on-prem. By the way, I'm also one of those people, I say on-prem, it's short for on-premises, and I think everybody ought to get in that habit because I've come across too many people that say on-premise. It's like, so no, there's a difference between on-premise and on-premises. One is a location, the other is an assumption. So, right? Yeah. Yeah, well, it also has to do with, okay, I'm connecting to an Exchange online session. What aspects of the user can I modify through this session as opposed to another way that I'm doing it when I'm connected to Skype for Business? Because there's different ways that those applications refer to the user account. So what are the different, you know, what do they have in common and what's different? See, now I'm becoming William Shatner up here now. Now, why can't we just get together and get these commands to all work? Okay, I need a tribble. But yeah, that part of it, that's the part that I think anybody's gonna find frustrating about this, because we have to tackle topics that we're not always real comfortable with. And I do the same thing. You know, I'm real comfortable with Exchange and Skype. But like I said, the SharePoint stuff gets me. And the other thing is that SharePoint is designed for the cloud. There's really that's probably the single best implementation in Office 365 is SharePoint and Exchange. Skype's getting better, but there's still some things that I like to do on premises. With Skype for Business, so, but and the Office stuff too is always going to throw me off a little bit, just because, like I said, I don't teach this stuff anymore. You need to disable Skype instant messaging conversations for a link user. Whoops, I gave that one away, didn't I? But yeah, that's one of the things we do have to worry about is supporting external communications, and. It's not just this part of it, it's gonna be all of the other little things about the way Skype for Business supports and manages communication with other services. You know, what if you want to tie in Skype with another messaging system? What are the options when it comes to tying in with an XMPP network? How do we do that? What's the procedure? Yes, I want to connect to Google Hangouts. Can I do that? Yeah, you can, but what's the process for doing it? How do I do it in PowerShell? And in as much as that's something that I have never done in a production environment, it's still something that you're responsible for knowing for the certification exam. So yeah, that gets into clear the user setting external communications, people on public IM networks. But that gets into, you know, understanding how to get into that admin center and doing some of the regular day-to-day external communication settings that you would manage in the cloud and how it might be different from an on-prem deployment. Plan for Exchange Online and Skype for Business Online. Where are we at on time? Okay. I'd like to make sure we've got time to get through this as well as talk about some other things. Managing anti-malware and anti-spam settings. Managing the routing of messaging, especially if you've got a hybrid deployment, because it can get a little bit sophisticated when you have a hybrid deployment and you're managing your mailbox, your MX records, and how you want messaging to flow. You know, I want it to hit Exchange Online Protection, but then I want it to come to my on-premises, or do I want to go 100% cloud? You know, there's some differences there in how all that gets managed. Planning for Exchange Online, that's part of it. Manage Skype for Business global external communication settings. We kind of covered that already. So you need to migrate your Exchange 2010 organization of 1,001 users. There was the giveaway, right? 1,001. You want to preserve users' OST files. Which migration methods can you use? Well, what we're getting to here, the part that I would ask you to focus on, is just the word migration. And then also taking a look at the options that are being presented here. Where do you use IMAP migration? Where do you use a cutover migration? When do you use stage migration or remote move migration? And in what situations do you use each of those? That's the part I would ask you to know. You know, what's going to happen if you're trying to migrate away from notes? What's going to happen if you've got somebody that's got Exchange 2000? Oh, dear God, I hope not. But those are little things that pop up. I had a guy in class about 6 weeks ago, and he was moving from a Linux-based, it wasn't SendMail, it was some other, no, it was another one, though, that they had the paid version, but some people had the public version. I can't tell you what it was. What's that? Yeah, that's what it was. And he was talking about how they were planning their migration. And we got into that. I dug into it as much as I could. I think I found him an article in some blog about migrating. But that's the kind of thing that you've got to know how to do in preparation for this particular cert. When do you use each of those methods? Which email applications would you use to migrate away from those? If you're doing a down-level version of Exchange, which ones can you do a remote move migration? Which ones do you have to do a different kind of migration? What are the situations in which you do an IMAP migration? Well, somebody's got a hosted solution, but we don't have administrative access because we're going through an application service provider. Okay. Sounds like you might be able to do an IMAP migration in that case. There's going to be no questions that involve third-party tools. It's a Microsoft exam. that's the difference. You know that there's the real world, and then there's the Microsoft world. And in the Microsoft world of exams, there is no company other than Microsoft. Although occasionally we do bring up Macs. And there's going to be more Linux popping up down the line as well. I mean, geez, we got a new Linux MCSE track. So I might have to go dig up my old Berkeley standard distributions and see what else I can come up with there. God. Yeah. It's going to kill me, man.
Is this Bob's wife? We regret to inform you.
What happened? He was just up on stage. He fell right off, man. Had the arm of the chair go right through his chest. Yeah, that sounds pleasant, doesn't it? You know, I know that one day I'm going to die, but I hope it's an interesting way to go. I want people to talk about it, you know? anyway. So that remote move migration is the only way that you want to handle that one because it's Exchange 2010. Other preparation resources. Okay, so I'm bookish. There is a Microsoft Press title for 70-347. It came out, I want to say, last spring. Does that sound right, Bob? It's coming to the revising it. Was that Orrin that wrote that? Do you remember? I don't know if it was Orrin Thomas or not. But with any of these, take a look at who wrote the book. See if they maintain a blog. Focus on, with these books, obviously, you got to get a tenant account. You got to get a 30-day eval or something you can play with. Re-emphasizing a point I made earlier, don't play around with your production deployment. That they frown on that. But get yourself, you know, go out and set up a dummy Outlook.com account with an email address and go out and get yourself a 30-day trial. And then cancel it at the end of 30 days. Put that on your task list and be sure to cancel it after 30 days. Yeah. Yes. The thing that we talked about earlier, because one of the guys, actually, there he is, talking about his lab environment that he has in his office and what he might have to do to, you know, do things out through the firewall and everything else, and that could create some issues. But I suggested maybe getting a trial Azure account as well and setting up your AD in Azure. That might help in some situations. These books are pretty solid. I've had both of them, and I used them both. But once again, so you're saying that they're revising the book. Have you heard anything about a release date?
December?
Okay. There's online courses, of course, Microsoft Virtual Academy. They're working on trying to keep the Microsoft Virtual Academy videos more current. So they're cutting down and making them smaller so the demos can be a little bit more relevant and stay relevant. edX.org. One of the things that I've also thrown out, and I probably should have mentioned it earlier, if you go out to technet.microsoft.com, one of the things you can get into off of productivity are the virtual labs. So Microsoft Virtual Labs, I know they've got several relating to Office 365. Microsoft Virtual Academy is pretty good about, as good as they can about staying current. And the other thing about online courses that I would mention, and I mentioned this in the last set, how many of you are familiar with, it used to be called TrainSignal, now it's Pluralsight. Those guys put out some pretty good content. And I know some of the folks that are responsible for that. And in as much as I would love to have any of you sitting in my class or another trainer's class in an instructor-led classroom, that isn't always possible. One of the nice things about that series, like what Pluralsight has, is that you can do that at your own pace on your own time. So there is, you know, advantages to any different option. Of course, instructor-led training. Yeah. Yes. Watch out before I fall off the stage. I better take a step back here. Go up to Microsoft Learning, and they've got, actually, you know what? How many of you want to get a breakdown of the new MCSE tracks? Okay, let me do this. Follow along with me. Get your phone out. Phone. And mine's going to blow up because it's a Note 7. Okay. So if you text message, the number is 52426. That's 52426. Subject, put learning for the subject. And that goes to Microsoft. They will text you back with a link where you can download a PDF that covers all of the new certifications that were announced yesterday. What's that? The subject is learning, L-E-A. L-E-A, learning, yeah, you guys know how to spell that. But yeah, how many of you get a text back already? Yeah, it works. I like technology. It's my friend. That bar is not my friend. But that's the answer to a lot of questions right there, because it shows you the productivity path that includes 346 and 347, as well as all you have to have is one more elective, and you're golden. You're an MCSE. I like that. 346, 347. If you've passed 341, the Exchange 2013 exam, or the Link 2013 exam, I can't remember the number on that one off the top of my head. But yeah, I looked at that and said, oh, look, I've got four MCSEs I didn't know about. I like that. So, where were we? I went back there. Instructor-led training. Hopefully I've done something to instill in you that maybe there is a purpose for an instructor. The one thing that I would say about these courses, because the guys that are teaching these courses, we're staying on top of things as much as we can, but we also recognize that Office 365 is a moving target. So I know in my classes what I'm doing, when we get to doing labs, very often, you know, they're doing a better job now trying to keep the lab steps up to date, but we've been around the block a couple of times with this stuff. So even if the detailed lab steps don't completely match, we'll get it covered. We'll figure it out, because there might be some, there might be a different button you've got to press, or it might be a different field you have to fill in. I tell you what, I went from, this was fun. I was teaching a 20346, and what had happened is that there was the rollover from the command line DeerSync to Azure AD Connect. I had nothing, but we figured it out. Which is, you know, that's the process. That's what any of us do. That's why you guys are you guys. I don't often use the term, but we're hackers. That's what we do. If I don't have instructions, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to reverse engineer something. I'm going to look something up. I'm going to try something. But I'm going to crack this thing wide open, one way or the other. And that's what we ended up doing. It wasn't that difficult, actually. But it was confusing for a lot of people when we started getting this
doesn't match up at all.
And so, yeah, it was because it's Azure AD Connect. It's not DeerSync anymore. Good God. Does this thing work? Maybe I ought to try this. Oh, yeah. Okay, so practice tests. If you have not been across the hall, who's been across the hall and checked out? Bob, did you see, did they have 347 on there as a practice? I know they had 346. Okay, a lot of cases I've come across, people are trying to put out practice stuff and they're not covering 347. So I would tell any of you, before you sign up to take this exam while you're here, go across the way to the study hall in Certification Central and sneak in there and take one of the practice tests. See how you do. Check your comfort level. If you go through every single question and it all seems like, yeah, I got this, this is butter, yeah, go ahead. But if you know that you're coming across some subjects, some topics that you're not as comfortable with, maybe, you know, go ahead and spend a little more time prepping before you go ahead and sign up, take an exam. But the other thing is, take an exam this week. It's half off. Remember that you can take an exam, you can fail an exam, you got to wait 24 hours before you take it again. After you have failed it twice, you have to wait 2 weeks. And limit is 5 times within a year. If you have failed a particular certification exam 5 times within a year, you got to wait a year before you can tackle that cert again. Normally, you know what, it's been a long time. I've never had to tell anybody that before. But these exams are frustrating a lot of people. I get that. That bar, okay, there's that bar. I'm keeping an eye on that. Anyway, get yourself a trial. Check it out. Of course, that's, you know, easier said than done. But, yeah, get yourself a trial account. other things that I would, you know what, I was supposed to put together a slide that showed all of the Office 365 sessions. Who's got the Android or the application for MS Ignite? Y'all got that? If you don't have it, there's a cool, the app is good. The app is very good. And then look up Office 365. It'll fill up like four pages of content. What I would focus on relative to this stuff is going to be day-to-day implementation. Security is going to be good, licensing. And then, you know, productivity, getting the most out of Skype for Business, getting the most out of Exchange Online, getting the most out of SharePoint Online. And don't deny yourself access to information on Office 365 Pro Plus. You know, so many of us have focused on these higher-end applications like Exchange, Skype for Business, SharePoint, et cetera, that we've kind of gotten away from the productivity tools that everybody uses on a regular basis. Yeah, I haven't taught an Excel class since 1994, but I got to know how to deploy it now. You know, that's what that whole configuration.xml is all about. Instructor-led labs, those are good. The hands-on labs upstairs, if you haven't checked that out, the HOLs are in the hangar. I call it the hangar because that room looks like an airplane hangar. But go check that out. Other talks, obviously. And, you know, there's so much. You can't keep track of the volume of content around here. Go to as many sessions as you can. Get sleep. Hydrate yourselves. Take care of your feet. Don't wear 4-inch heels. I'm not going to worry about microphones. I think this room's got good enough acoustics that I've been able to understand folks. We got a couple minutes yet. So what can I do to help you guys? Yeah. They're open late. 6 p.m.? Yeah, they open up pretty early too, yeah. You know what, the exam area will be one of the last places shut down. The trick is, though, if you're planning on taking a certification exam this week, sign up for it now. Those slots fill up fast. You know, you got a 50% off on these certification exams. Those slots fill up real quick. I've been around, I've known one guy took 20 exams in 1 week. No. No, Telmo. It's Telmo. He's a developer. Yeah, he's working for Microsoft now. Yeah.
For the exam, if you have a voucher code, can you just use it?
Here? I wouldn't. I would save the voucher. Oh, you have five? Yeah, go ahead and use it. Yeah, you should be able to walk up. But, you know, the thing is about having a voucher, that's a free test. Yeah, I'd want to keep that one in my pocket if I could. Yeah, Bob?
Bob, have you taken the exam from?
No, I haven't done the home exam yet. I've heard about it, but, you know, that's where they've got the webcam set up, and you got to move your computer around to show that you don't have anything underneath the table that you're cheating with. And you've done it? Okay. I've heard some, you know what, I probably should, because one of my issues is that I'm reaching a point where I'm getting a little bit of performance anxiety when I go in to take a certification exam. You know, I had a long time when I was passing them all that first try, and lately it's been more difficult for me. So I probably ought to maybe think about taking an exam at home. It might be easier for me. I might be able to stay more relaxed. Has it? Did you have a question? He had a question. It's across and then down a little bit. So 104, 105, 106, 107. But they've got a big sign out front that says study hall, and they're hours. After the last session, I just walked a bunch of people over there. We took a look at it, and it was full. They had one seat available then. Both. Both of them were there. Yeah. It's Certification Central. And you have to say it with that voice with the air quotes, by the way. I'm here to see Certification Central. Did you have a question?
Was there a 347
prep? This is the 347 prep.
Or 346.
There was a 346 prep before this one.
Okay.
But it's, you know what? I told the folks that came up with 346, I talk about a lot of the same things. So you It's me. You didn't miss that much. Boy, I hold myself in high regard, don't I? But if you want to talk about it, catch me after. There's really not that much difference. And the deck's going to be available too. Yeah. There is a 347 book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
347 came out last spring, but it's already being updated. Hang on here. Let's check the wonderful world of the internet. Yes, I'm using Microsoft Edge. So I want to go, I know I should probably go to Microsoft Press, but up here, 70-347. Oh, what a lovely blue dress. Okay. There it is. It is Orrin Thomas. So, yeah, he wrote 346 and 347. Is he here this week? Do you know? Orrin comes to these quite a bit. He's an Aussie. But I haven't seen him yet. There's just 347, but it covers both tests. It covers both tests. It's the same course. Yeah, I taught them both. Yeah, thanks. So it's the only course that's available. And what they're doing with 347, 346 is the one we were using DeerSync. And then they came out with Azure AD Connect, and then they modified that. They updated everything to be current, but it's still essentially the same content. Okay, so what else can I do for everybody? You okay? Can I juggle? No. You know what? I was telling this. I wish I had a guitar, man. I'd love to hear what it sounded like up here. I should have brought one of mine. I like building them. They're fun. Electrics. I haven't figured out how to build an acoustic yet. I probably need to figure that one out. But electrics are easy because I build the bodies, then I buy the neck from Warmoth. I cheat. I do it by hand. It's the bodies. The bodies are easy. Use a router. And I use templates too. Okay, anybody else? You got a question? Do you have a question? Your eyes are not deceiving you. Do a packet analysis. Take a look at what's happening underneath it in the packet analysis. Same thing. Just it's got a better GUI. The GUI makes it easier. Okay. Are we good? We're good? I got 11:58. I got 2 minutes. Oh, thanks.